movie and music fans. This is Sutton, your host on Sutton on Cinema and Sound. I'm joined here today by my father.
Hello, everyone.
Today we're reviewing a very special album by what is to me a very special band. This is Good and Evil, the sophomore and so far final album by indie rock band Tali Hall. So this album, to give some backstory, the first album, Marmon's Marvelous Mechanical Museum, was originally made and released in 2005 on the indie label Quack Media in locally in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and then it had a national release in 2006. Eventually, Tali Hall signed onto Atlantic Records, which re-released the album on 2008, where Tali Hall was given a chance to go back and remix and re-record parts that they were initially unsatisfied with. This album was actually recorded in late 2009, despite being released in 2011. And the reason that was because although Atlantic helped to finance the album, after the album was actually completed, they kept ignoring Tali Hall because it was prioritizing what albums would be released, and I guess an artist that I felt more confident in. So Tali Hall cut ties with Atlantic and went back to their indie label at Quack Media to release the album with. So this album is actually really different from the first album. It's as well as from what would kind of be like the spiritual third album, Hawaii Part 2. It's kind of like a midway point between the two in terms of, I guess, songwriting and being something that's kind of more than what just the combination of its songs. I think one thing that's really interesting on this album was Zubin, who is actually a writer now. He co-wrote two of these songs, although in the first album he only co-wrote Welcome to Tali Hall and didn't have write any songs on his own. But despite this album having four songwriters, whereas their first album had three, the first album actually had a lot more variety to it, whereas this album has more focus. The reason that is because this album has the central theme of dichotomies. This was a theme that they decided that they would all, roll with before they really started writing. And I think it's a really interesting experiment. There were four songwriters, and all of them had to relate, by some extent, relate their songs back to the central theme. And it could definitely risk the album losing its cohesion, so overall, how do you feel about the central theme they chose to center this album around? And
well, it's interesting. You talk about dichotomies. There's a lot of opposites. There's a lot of ands. There's a lot of ampersands. Most of these songs have ampersands within them. A number of them have ampersands within the title. So you have a lot of good and evil. This is, as you mentioned, a band that in their first album was really more comedic and more rock focused. And in the second album, the words and the lyrics really take center stage. In addition, you get a lot of more of a focus on the environment, earth, sun, wind, stars, weather, sky and land. And this is really part of that transition towards Hawaii Part 2. Sky and land in particular appears in the first song, it appears in the seventh song, and then in the final song and the final stanza, you have reference to a Ferris wheel, which of course is something that goes between the sky and the land.
Yeah, it's interesting how much cohesion is within this album, even with the addition of another songwriter, and how many themes interweave themselves throughout the different songs. I feel like their first album is kind of like reaching into a toy box while blindfolded. You don't know what exactly you're going to be pulling out next. Like, one of the songs, Spring and the Storm, is about, taking notice of the environment and feeling that, like, one is insignificant to it until you realize that you're really all a part of the cycle. And then the next song after that, True Love, is about Hunting Town, the Olsen twins, Mary Kay and Ashley. It's very carnival-esque, and I think to some it could appear like it just lacks a lot of cohesion. It's very inconsistent. To me, I think it kind of made it exciting, not really knowing what song would come on next, and it kind of reminded me of parts of the White Album, where each song would kind of shift genres, and I think that could be a reason why when I first listened to this album, I was kind of baffled and confused. I thought a really big part of who Charlie Hall was their humor. I think it's at their core, it's expressed with their colorful ties. It's a very kind of quirky personality about them.
But the carnivalesque part that you mentioned, there are some nods back to that in this album as well. There are one or two songs where some of the music sounds like sounds from a carnival. And the final song does have references to a carnival as well, with that Ferris wheel and other things that are carnivalesque. But this is a very different sound as well. While the first one, as we said, is more of a rock kind of sound to it, this is almost more of a folk music kind of sound in at least a number of the songs.
Yeah, I agree. And I think unlike the first album, which, as I mentioned, had songs like To Love, there really isn't a song on this album that doesn't, by some extent, tie back to that center of theme. Every song really has some kind of purpose on this album. And I think even what I think is like the most commercial sounding song on here, which is the 10th song, Turn the Lights Off, has a very different and kind of obscure meaning that I think could very much be lost on the listener until they discover the meaning. And I think the pieces really fall into place. It's also the only song that had a music video made for it,
which is in sharp contrast to the first album, which I think there were how many videos for that one?
There were 8. One of them was made in 2004 by Joe Hawley, who made it for one of his college classes, filmmaking classes. But then someone posted the video on a website called Albino Black Sheep, and it actually was a really big hit on there. It gained millions of views, and it was kind of a big kind of break for Charlie Hall. The other 7 were released as part of their internet show. So that's why they were able to make so many for the first album.
They're very skilled at putting together these videos, and they later had another viral video, or at least one of the members, or two of the members, involving Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, that was by Rob Cantor, who made that video in 2014. So, what are some of your favorite songs on this album?
You know, there are a number here that have a theme of monsters, which seems to be one that they always seem to enjoy. So there's Cannibal, which was kind of a fun one. There's The Lady, which involves good and evil. So there were a number that had, kind of catchy tunes that were good, grab your imagination as well.
Yeah, I think some of my favorites were Ant, which, interesting enough, the song A Lady, which you mentioned, comes halfway in the album, actually uses the main melody from Ant. So it's kind of like, it kind of helps to like tie the album together and like kind of remind the listener about really the central theme of this album. And one of the things that was kind of jarring on the first time I listened to the song And was along the list of like opposites that they mentioned were John and Kyoko.
And I was wondering if that was kind of a nod to the award that one of the band members had won.
Yeah, Andrew Horowitz, which of course I mentioned in the first, when we did the podcast for the first album, Wanna Be My John Lennon Scholarship, I think it is probably an homage to him. It was
because all the other ones are really kind of opposites, and I don't think John and Yoko necessarily fit into a clear category of opposite.
Yeah, they definitely aren't opposites the way hot and cold are opposites, but it's interesting to think about how their characterizations might be how we view those opposites, at least by Beatles fans. Like John is the good one who founded the Beatles, and Yoko is the evil one of the pair who I guess entered the Beatles in many fans' eyes. I guess my two other favorites are "Misery Fell" by Andrew Horowitz. Yeah, it has a really great imagery, like how misery fell on the town, and I guess talking about how the town can kind of find happiness again, like either through it kind of implies, I think, whether it's through religion and looking at the stars in the sky or like through more, I guess, practical scientific means. I think my favorite one though on this album is definitely the final song, "Fate of the Stars." It's nearly 7 minutes long, which is kind of like Hawaii Part 2, and how that album ends with the song "Dreams Suite" in C major, which is 7 minutes long. And I think both songs are kind of similar in how they definitely like change their form to, I guess, keep to maintain their interest, so they don't just before they get boring, they suddenly change like mood, tone, and the topic of the lyrics, as well as the sound. There were parts of this song that have like sound collages that sound very, I guess, heavenly, and there are also sound collages that sound like what would be the opposite of heavenly.
I would think this is probably the most complex song on the album, certainly the longest on the album. And this is the last that we've heard of this band for a time.
Yeah, it's a Fate of the Stars is already kind of a somber song, but I think what adds to the somberness is really the realization that it is the final Charlie Hall song, either for God knows how long or possibly forever. In fact, as we were recording this, 2 days ago was the 10th anniversary of their hiatus. They have unfortunately been apart for longer than they've been together at this point. What happened 10 years and 2 days ago was they performed their final concert, and that was part of their tour to promote this album. And it was also the last time that the five of them were in the same room together. We actually, before listening to this album, to record this podcast, we watched some of the music videos from their first album, and I think it's really evident how close the five bandmates were. You can tell that they were really close friends. They loved being having fun in this band together, and yeah, of course they all went to the same college, and that's how they all met each other. So yeah, I think even it's not just a shame that the band is on kind of this state of hibernation, but that these five really close friends haven't seen each other for so long, even though some of them have collaborated with each other or have seen each other in any number of groups that are less than the five.
So that first album, which we said was more of a rock vibe and more comedic, kind of has that feel of a group that's together that isn't very far removed from college and that communal experience. And then they, and with the second album, as we said, the words, the lyrics took center stage. And then after this last concert, they were not in the room together again. So. After college, those bonds kind of break apart a little bit as everybody goes off in their different directions and with their lives and career paths.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Although I'm happy that the all the members of the band still seem to like really enjoy talking about the band's past, and none of them have outright denied that the band is over. Of course, that's really all it takes for fans to accept that the band is finished. Like when the Beatles disbanded, it was Paul McCartney in an interview that said that the Beatles were over. And Some of them have, when they're asked about it, they've said that it's in a state of hibernation. Some of them have said that something, you know, will happen sometime, but we don't know to what extent they will return if they could return. And I guess to finish it off, this album actually surprised their record label with how well it did. It reached number 9 on the alternative rock charts, which means that it actually outsold albums like Fleetwood Mac's Rumours and Queen's Greatest Hits. But due to an issue with iTunes, where it was like backlisted as a result of them re-indexing, in a scenario I don't completely understand, but in other words, it was made temporarily unavailable, and by the time they resolved the issue and got it back on, it unfortunately fell off the charts. So I think coming back to what I said earlier about how when I first listened to this album, I was confused because the quirkiness was such a big part of who I thought Tali Hall was. Although I enjoyed for both the first and the second albums for different reasons, I think I prefer the first just for like the excitement of like not knowing which song would come next and the variety, and I wasn't sure like whether the band were good enough songwriters to really chill off their characteristic traits. It's really interesting how each time I've listened to this album it just got better and better for me, and I think this was actually the listen that really won me over, and now I think this album for me is better than the first album. Although I think the variety on the first album was something that it really embraced and that may make me more likely go back to a song from the first album, I think that the first album really is more of a collection of songs, whereas this album is definitely an album experience with a lot of intertwining themes running throughout the different songs, and it's capped off in a very satisfying way. It has a lot to say about, I don't want to make it sound pretentious, but I guess about the world we live in. I think the best types of entertainment experiences don't just provide a window of escape, but also give you something that you can really, I guess, bring back. I feel like dichotomies aren't necessarily something that if you think about it, to us it's just obvious, like hot is the opposite of cold, but this album, it's really, I think, trying to really say something, I think, about the spectrums between them and how what really is good and evil aren't actually real. There aren't any things that are pure good or pure evil, they're just these abstract concepts, and everything is encapsulated within these spectrums. Overall, I think Tali Hall is really kind of outstanding work that's really greater than what a lot of other bands have been able to accomplish with just two albums. With just these two albums, they've really shown an ability to really create an experience that is a lot greater than some of their parts, and just how much you can really improve about storytelling and philosophizing with just two works. It makes me really sad that this is the last album we are even capable of reviewing that's Tali Hall related, and I just hope that, even though it seems kind of silly hoping, I really hope that something in the future may happen where they may have a reunion, whatever that might be.
It'll be fun to see what these individuals do. They clearly have a lot of talents, are very inventive. It was a lot of fun to follow their change in style over time and the enjoy the music that they've created. Most of them are actually still involved in the music industry, so there's more to come, not sure exactly in what form.
Yeah, in fact, Rob Cantor, Andrew Horowitz, and Joe Holly have actually released each one a solo album, so although, of course, they can't be really the sum of what Tali Hall's parts were, even though those albums do demonstrate their individual talents. So, thank you very much for reviewing this very wonderful and interesting album with me. And be sure to tune in next time. This is such an awesome and sound.